Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dragon Squeeze by Eve Langley, narrated by Chandra Sky. Prologue. Somewhere in a little town that used to be sleepy. I think the Lytropia Institute is doing bad things. Very bad and illegal things, not unusual in the cutthroat field of medicine. Everyone wanted to get ahead, to be the one to discover the next billion-dollar idea. In that respect, Lytropia wasn't any different. The medical building had secrets, lots and lots of secrets. Some of them broke laws and crossed ethical boundaries. What to do? The video footage someone had sent by email proved they were engaged in less than savory practices, and there was no disguising the fact that, in the video, the owner of the institute appeared quite clearly. Even clearer was the fact that someone, or something, was being held prisoner. Not anywhere public, though. A search of the simple three-story lab and office building didn't reveal any hidden rooms or off-limit sections that were above ground anyway. But rumors, more like whispers really, claimed that the institute didn't stop at the first floor, but rather stretched below the surface, underfoot, where no one could see. More gossip hinted at level after level of hidden labs and cages. Cages with things inside, not quite human things, by nature or design. Did someone play God with lives? It seemed so, and yet the outside world didn't know that, didn't even suspect. They thought the institute, once a place for mental patients and left derelict for decades, was a place of higher understanding. Owned and operated by the emerging shapeshifters of the world, it was involved in the study of the lycanthrope genome, trying to discover what made a werewolf a were. How could their body reshape as it did, heal so much quicker? If they could figure it out, then the application of that knowledge to certain physical ailments would be mind-blowing. Healing wasn't the only thing the institute was researching. The lichen people had amazing hair, and they could almost literally grow it overnight if they chose. There was incredible interest from the follicular industry as to possible uses for curing baldness. The Lytropia Institute and its testing of shapeshifters should not be mistaken or compared to the now-defunct BitTech facility. That corporation had dissolved within the last few months. The three labs it had operated were shut down and cleaned out when Parker, a real slimy piece of work, disappeared suddenly after his niece's birthday. To those who'd somehow managed to ignore the news and crazy revelations of the past 9 months, Parker was the werewolf who'd outed shapeshifters and all manner of other non-human beings to the world. Not everyone took it well, especially those suddenly thrust into the limelight. Apparently, the shapeshifter community, or was that PAX, were quite happy hiding in the shadows, pretending they lived a perfect cleaver life with a white picket fence. Just ignore the fact that they didn't own a dog, and yet erected a doghouse out back with heating and cooling and all kinds of fancy amenities. Shapeshifters had gotten shoved out of the closet, and not all humans had reacted well to the news, which, in turn, meant many people were mad at Parker. Even more people were scared of him. What would he tell the world next? What devious things did he plot? Parker and BitTech appeared gone. But did that mean the experiments they'd conducted ceased too? No one knew for sure. BitTech didn't leave behind any clues. But wow, was its shutdown worthy of a convincing conspiracy theory? The whispers said cover-up. The dark armored vehicles with no plates, no identifying marks at all, arrived under cover of darkness. The day after Parker vanished, someone swooped into the BitTech facilities when most people slept, a huge convoy seen by only a few. The videos uploaded showed a stream of tail and headlights snaking to the Institute's remote locations outside three towns. Most people went back to bed rather than investigate. They missed all the action. In the morning, the trucks were gone, as was everything inside Bitek. Nothing got left behind. Or so the media reports claimed, as the reporters and their cameramen wandered the buildings. The office and lab spaces barren of anything, especially clues. Lytropia Institute, often shortened to LI, was not Bitek. The shifters who owned the building and created the facility never hid their purpose. They'd explained from the beginning. "We are dedicated to discovering the secret to being a werewolf." They were very candid because they'd seen the backlash caused by Parker and the experiments he'd condoned, genetic experiments on unwilling hosts. LI didn't experiment, though, not on humans or other shifters, at least. They studied things like tissue and fluids, putting them under microscopes, injecting them with various elements to trigger reactions. Perfectly harmless stuff. "If LI is so above board, then what are they hiding so far below ground? Did they play with things best left alone? Who to tell? And what to tell?" An accusation required accurate information, because what if there was a logical explanation? Perhaps the company had the proper permission from the government to play with the lives of others. "I need the truth." Infiltration was required, but that required skills to get past the barriers in the way. Someone tech-savvy, who could penetrate firewalls and sift through files undetected. If someone could thrust right into the heart of the enemy, perhaps they would emerge with the secrets needed to answer the eternal question: is Lytropia doing good or evil? And what could be done about it? Chapter 1. "This is the place. I can feel it in my gut." "You felt that in the last place we raided, too," her cousin remarked. "Turns out it was all that hot sauce you put on your tacos." "Fire in the hole, and then back out." The warning on the label obviously didn't exaggerate about the burn. "Eating is like working out. Sometimes it hurts, but it was so worth it." The heat in her mouth, the salty tang of the cheese, the rich sweetness of the salsa, the seasoned meat complemented by the guacamole. Pure heaven. She'd have added the whole operation to her hoard if she could, but apparently, kidnapping food truck owners to cook for her at any time of the day was considered confinement. Humans and their laws, such spoil sports. "I can't believe they shut Pedro down," Dika shook her head. "He made the best chalupas." "He did. Such a shame he had to close. Not for health violations, but illegal importing. Who knew there was a market for smuggling banned hot sauce into the country? Good thing Addie had snared a few cases before the FDA confiscated and destroyed the recovered stash. Wish I had one of his chicken tacos and a half dozen chalupas right now." Dika rubbed her tummy and jutted her lower lip in a formidable pout. "We shouldn't have skipped dinner." "We'll grab a snack after we're done." And by snack, Addie meant hitting the nearest diner and ordering everything on the menu, except for the salads. All that green and healthy stuff just got in the way. "I say we're already done. There's nothing to see." Dika pointed from her spot, a good vantage only a few dozen yards outside the walled compound, with a perfect line of sight to the now derelict building. Her spot was also up a tree, but given the fall weather, most of the branches were bare. Perfect for perching. Addie poked at her cousin. "You want to leave before checking it out? Are you kidding me? Look at it. It's perfect." She pointed to the building, its windows dark, the grounds appearing lifeless. "If by perfect you mean abandoned, what better cover if you were experimenting illegally?" "If" being the key word. Maybe there was some hinky stuff going on, but according to our dossier on this Bitek place, the government cleared the building out last week. there's nothing left. Or so they want you to think. I call bullshit. Addie flung the curse with gusto, not afraid at all, because Aunt Yolanda wasn't around with her bottle of castor oil. She didn't recommend gargling it, and if you swallowed, expect the fishy burp 20 minutes later. You and I both know how easy it is to cover things up. Deka groaned. Not with the conspiracy thing again. Weren't you paying attention in our theology class? If it quacks like a duck, then chances are it is a duck, and we should bring it back to cook so he can glaze it. Deep fry. Whatever. The point is, this is just an abandoned building. Nothing more. If it's so abandoned, then why is there such a loss of electricity in this area? Did you know the average neighborhood only has a loss of 4 to 6% energy during distribution? But here, it's almost 4 times that, almost as if something massive is siphoning from the grid. When Aunt Wayita's nephew on her husband's side was growing those pot plants and borrowing electricity from the neighborhood, they noticed right away because everyone's bill suddenly went up. So don't you think they would have investigated something happening here and shut it down? Deka queried. That's what usually happens. But in this case, no one noticed because those living in the area aren't being billed for it. But the raw meter reading she'd gotten her digital fingers on didn't lie. Whatever is sucking up the juice was still at it as of 2 days ago. Addie couldn't help a satisfied smile at her awesome sleuthing skills. Deka shook her head instead of being impressed. How do you know these things? Because Addie knew where to poke her nose. You may bow before my greatness. You wish. So let's say I believe you, and there is something sucking the power. Deka made obscene slurping noises because she lacked technique. Then where is it? This place doesn't have any other buildings large enough to house another lab. Not a secret one, at any rate. It's here, Addie pointed. I'll bet you a case of Twinkies, from her precious hoard, that this place has an underground lab, just like that Bitek place did in Florida. And how do you plan to get into it? The military sealed off the building. Watch and learn, dear cousin. With a move a gymnast would applaud, Addie did a loop on her branch and dropped out of the tree, landing with her knees slightly bent and her arms outflung in a flourish. Style couldn't be ignored. With a tilt of her head, Addie addressed her cousin still perched above. Are you coming, or will any treasures I find belong to me alone? Heifer, you'd better share. I gave up a season premiere with that hunky demon fellow to follow your ass. Addie blew a spraying wet raspberry. Oh, please, you never watched live television anymore. And besides, even you have to admit this is much more exciting. We aren't getting any younger. Tick-tock. Soon, she'd find herself grounded and bored. Throwing herself backwards off the branch, Deka flipped in the air and landed on her feet. And the crowd goes fucking wild, she crowed, holding her hands in the air and cheering. It would be more impressive if it was a rare gift. However, all the dragonesses in the Silvergrace family possessed agility and grace. In order to keep themselves in shape, they had a ballroom at home with swings at impossible heights that they practiced leaping from, and no nets to catch them. Aunt Yolanda always had splints on hand for the few times they'd failed as youngsters. Even the most painful break didn't frighten them off. They got right back up there, swinging and leaping. Even in a cast, the girls would practice, because as her mother said when Addie's sister Amy dared to complain, think of the cast as the weight of your enemy clinging to you. He will try to bring you down. You must adjust for this, and then crush him. Crack. She could still hear the smack of her mother's fist against her palm. Welcome to Addie's world. Her mother didn't bake cookies, drive them to soccer practice, or belong to the PTA. Her mother was cutthroat in real life and in business. Not that anyone ever found the bodies. What bodies? Investigations never turned up anything. And so what if the convenient disappearances meant that their empire grew? Mommy Dearest protected the family. It was the most treasured thing in her hoard. Hashtag, don't fuck with family. Addie bent over and grabbed the bag she'd stashed at the foot of the tree. I brought a few tools to give us a hand getting inside. I don't suppose you've got a ladder in your bag of tricks. No, but I do have rope. She patted the heavy canvas sack and grinned. I've also got handcuffs, in case we get lucky. Throw in some lube and it's a party, Deeka muttered. Speaking of, let's get this party started. Restraining an urge to whistle, Addie headed toward their target. The first layer of protection was a 10-foot stone wall. Deeka knelt and offered a hand to spring Addie. She stepped lightly into her cousin's laced fingers, and as she was propelled upward, she grabbed the rough lip of the barricade and hoisted herself onto it. As she sat up, the bag swished past her face, narrowly missing her. It hit with a thump on the other side. She made a noise. You missed. Pity, Deeka muttered. Give me a hand, because I am not ruining my manicure on this wall. Addie maneuvered herself onto her belly and dangled down, her hand outstretched. Deeka jumped, and their fingers linked, the jolt making Addie grumble. I'm going to have a stone-speckled belly. Really, not a sexy look. Right up there with plastic waffle lounge chair butt. Stop complaining and pull. Have you been hitting that donut place for breakfast again? Addie huffed. Yes. And you didn't bring me any? You are so demoted from favorite cousin spot. Cough up some dough to buy some, and maybe I'll bring you some back. Or even better, trade you for some of your cakes. Never. Addie didn't believe in sharing. It's my hoard. Sitting on the wall, they took a moment to survey the inner yard, the very quiet and dark yard. There was something kind of disappointing about scaling a wall and dropping down to the other side without getting attacked by dogs or caught by guards with bright flashlights. It made a mockery of her effort to look hot as part of her plan to distract while she kicked ass. The second gate, about 10 feet from the first, was comprised of chain link and barbed wire at the top. A sign cautioned them about the electrical voltage. Addie reached out and touched the cold metal. Nothing jolted. The power's off on the fence. Good thing, or you'd have hair like Babette did when she tangled with that electrical eel off the barrier reef. Such an awesome family vacation. Sun, sand, and every night for dinner. Sushi. The poor villa chef had quit cooking because they kept refusing to eat the lavish suppers he prepared them. Not their fault they ate al fresco in the ocean. Deeka poked her fingers through the mesh and began to climb. I hate barbed wire. It's hell on my leggings. Then good thing I brought some tools. Addie patted her leather jacket. Genuine, she might add, because the artificial kind offended the predator in her. The interior pocket held wire cutters and a whistle, in case she got bored waiting for some action to find them. Click, click. She created an opening while Deeka kept watch. Of her phone. At least one of them was keeping on top of the latest social media scandals. The grill of fencing fell, leaving a wide hole that they climbed through, still uncontested. How disheartening. We are wasting time. Deeka groused. There's nothing here. I can feel it. So could Addie. The ground beneath her feet didn't vibrate with electricity. Nothing hummed at all. She should have sensed something. Anything. However, admitting that her cousin was possibly right? Not about to happen. It only seems like that. They've got the place heavily shielded, I'll wager. Of course they do. Deeka said with a roll of her eyes. Because no one ever notices major construction happening in their town. Not if it's happening underground. It still requires supplies. Don't you think people would notice construction trucks and cement mixers and electricians and stuff parading in and out all the time? Not to mention, wouldn't the workers talk about it? Logic. Who used that as an argument? Then how do the supervillains do it, huh? Explain that. Deka made a rude gesture instead. I don't have to explain it, because it's fiction. You know, as in make-believe. You have no imagination. Whereas Addie had too much of it. Plus, she had a healthy dose of boredom, which meant she looked for any excuse to get out. Now, if only those excursions didn't result in sirens most of the time. Her sister Amy complained that being her alibi was cutting into her alone time with her mate. Exactly. Duh. The first two obstacles overcome, they ran across the barren lawn. Nothing barked. No one yelled halt. Not a single bullet furrowed the hard-packed dirt. Such a letdown. They reached the front door of the place, boarded over with Do Not Trespass spray-painted in large letters. All of the windows on this level sported wooden shutters, nailed and glued, kind of like sex sometimes. The barrier was meant as a deterrent, to those who obeyed human laws anyway. For a dragon, it looked more like someone begging for a break-in. Addie couldn't resist. Her need to see what existed on the other side, in any situation, was why she always carried a crowbar. It would also double as a weapon in case of a zombie apocalypse. A dual-purpose tool, which increased her efficiency. See, Mother, I didn't ignore all my lessons. A quick rummage through her bag brought forth her 2-foot leverage. The plywood creaked and squealed as she heaved with the crowbar. Nails ripped loose, and there was a crackle as dried glue cracked. Some of it held tight, though, and the plywood snapped suddenly, sending Addie stumbling. Fucker! She tackled it from the other side while Deka took a selfie and loaded it to her Snapchat account. You'd better have gotten my good side, Addie growled as she heaved off another huge plank, revealing her prize, the glass doors into this place. Since she didn't see a lock, her crowbar acted as a key. She gave it a mighty swing and braced for the musical tinkle of breaking glass. Bang! Bounce! She staggered from the door, arm vibrating. Not a single crack. Maybe she hadn't hit it hard enough. Bringing back the arm holding the crowbar, Addie swung with more force. Bang! The recoil proved worse than the first time. And still nothing. She glared at the offending glass. It mocked her with its unscratched surface. Deka sighed. Dude. It's like earthquake-proof. And besides, why are you trying to break it? It's not locked. See? She yanked at the portal, and it opened. No electricity means no power to the magnetic locks. It's probably why they plywood-sheeted it. I knew that. Addie strutted in with her chin held high. Never admit ignorance, unless the person hearing it is going to die. Deka would live another day. But the weekend was uncertain if she kept running her smart mouth. Entering the lobby, Addie shuddered. Ugh, what a creepy location. The pristineness of the place proved spookier than any cobweb-riddled and rotted mansion. Damn, this place is cleaner than the house, Deka remarked. Too clean. Addie wandered around, looking for any kind of odor that didn't have a bleached overtone. Whatever was happening here, they didn't want anyone finding out about it. But no one is perfect. They had to have forgotten something. So where do you want to start looking? Below ground. She stared at the shiny faux marble floor. That's where the really interesting shit happens. Maybe this time she would find the secret lab, except the stairwell didn't have any stairs going down. Not even a door. None of the rooms on the main level had any kind of passage leading to a sublevel. Not even the utility room with its pipes and conduits. The giant breaker board showed the main power of the building turned off. Flicking up the main switch didn't bring anything to life. Her lips turned down. They cut the electricity to this place. Because no one is using it. Dika snapped her gum, the cherry aroma a vivid contrast to the aesthetically clean nature of the place. No one is using this level, Addie corrected. We need to go down. If there is a down, we searched every inch of the main floor. Nothing. We didn't try the elevator. On account that it doesn't work so well without power. I'm going to look. While Dika grumbled, she nonetheless followed, taking charge of the crowbar to pry the door to the elevator shaft open. The cab was present, and it took only a boost to go through the hatch in the ceiling. Dika quickly followed. They sat in almost pure darkness until Addie pulled out some glow sticks from an inner pocket. She cracked one and left it atop the elevator box. She tossed the other over the side. It didn't fall far. Don't let Dika be right. She couldn't afford to be wrong again. She scrambled to the edge and grabbed hold of the ladder bolted to the wall. She took it down and not very far, maybe another 10 feet below the main level where the elevator cab was stopped. From the ladder, she jumped onto the metal plates that comprised the floor. Grimy with dust, they looked like they'd sat here forever. The green glow of her stick lit the space with the silent machines and stopped gears. She didn't see a single exit out of here, other than back up the way they'd come. She peeked all over for a trap door, a conduit big enough for a body, anything. She was sadly disappointed. Now are you ready to admit defeat? Dika asked, joining her at the bottom. I'm telling you, there's something here. I know it. Knew it, yet couldn't find it. If there was, it's gone now. We're wasting our time. Maybe we should check the top levels. For what? Creak. Dika abruptly stopped talking as they both peered upward. What was that? Addie whispered, although she'd seen enough movies to guess. The elevator suspended over them jolted again, but they were already moving to flatten themselves against the wall as it plummeted down the 10 feet or so, not far, but enough to make noise, and squish them if they'd still been under it. The sound of the crash reverberated, and she clenched her teeth, more in annoyance. What the fuck? More like who? Dika replied, peering upward. Her eyes flashed green in the dark. We are not alone. Hallelujah. Addie sang the happy words. About time someone challenged us. Let's go find them. They dove for the ladder at the same time, and hands lapped each other as they strove to choose who would climb first. Addie won. She clambered dragon quick, which she might add was vastly superior to monkey quick, and sprang onto the roof of the elevator ready to fight. Dika joined her a moment later. Do you see anyone? Her cousin asked. Yoo-hoo, we're still here. Come and get us. Shh, you idiot. We don't want to scare them off. Inviting prey to their death always seemed to spook them. Well, I wouldn't have to if they weren't so rude in hiding themselves. I mean, really, why go through the trouble of dropping an elevator on us if they're not going to follow through and make sure the job is done? A good point. Slackers, whoever it was must have come in through the lobby. The cut is low on the cable. She held it up and showed its clean edge. Which means they're not far. Whee! Dika yodeled as she sprang for the lip of the door, now above the elevator cab. Save some for me, Addie hollered as she quickly followed. She spilled out into the main lobby and found Dika standing still, probably on account of her staring at the huge device sitting on the floor. The one counting down. 12. 11. I don't remember seeing this when we came in. 10. On account it wasn't here. 9. Shit, she slapped Dika in the arm. 8. They pivoted and their toes dug for purchase as they began to sprint. 7. 6. The door seemed much farther away than Addie remembered. 5. 4. 3. The outside air hit them, but they didn't stop. 2. She pushed herself as hard as she could. 1.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?